Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey there. Come on in.
I'm in.
The water's fine. This is Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. And we've got the Hollywood goo.
Keep going. I can't wait to hear some.
As Conan likes to say, what's the buzz?
It's literally
what's the buzz
goo
out there on the streets. It is goo.
Goo you scraped off on a Hollywood sidewalk.
It's the gum
what you're looking for. Listeners
underneath an executive's desk.
Yeah.
We're your hosts. I'm Jesse Gaskell, and that is Mike Sweeney.
That thing over there is Mike Sweeney. speaking of goo, he's human goo that has the gift of speech.
Yes.
Somewhat sentient. That's debatable. But we discussed the behind the scenes.
He said he was going to do abs today, but
right.
He has yet to do them.
Yeah, but who wants that kind of access?
That's there's such a thing as too much access.
He's begged us to watch him brush his teeth, and we just say, no, we're not doing it. No. That's season four.
You did a gig with another host.
I did. I just finished a 5-week job with David Letterman.
Yeah. I've heard of him.
Yes. No, he's hosting a new show on Netflix. It's a stand-up show called That's My Time with David Letterman. He does some time up top, and then he has a comedian on who does like 5 minutes, and then Dave interviews the comedian. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a new show.
Yeah, and it's recorded in front of a live audience, I'm assuming.
Yes, we recorded it at the historic Fonda Theater here in
Hollywood. Oh, I love
Hollywood.
That theater.
Oh, yeah, it's a great theater. I'd never worked with him before, and so that was quite exciting for me. And there was just one other writer, Mike Gibbons, very, very funny comedy writer here in L.A. And so
you guys wrote all of Letterman's set,
right,
basically.
Dave, of course.
Yeah.
Wrote. And he was incredible. He was amazing. And, you know, you'd write one-liners for him, and then he would just kind of put them into his own vernacular. Like, he would just take a one-sentence premise and on stage in front of the audience, tease it out and build it up and then just nail the punchline.
Land the plane. Wow.
Yeah, unbelievable. Just joke after joke. And it was...
Oh, that must have been so much fun to watch.
It was incredible to watch. And then sometimes he just started doing jokes that we sent that he had never even said he liked. He just did out of memory.
Oh, he just remembered? Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. And he's hilarious. He was hilarious just to hang out. Like while we were going over the monologues.
Anything, was that your first time meeting him?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And anything anyone said around him, he would just grab out of the air and have a funny reply to and just incredible to watch.
Did you have to learn what he liked to riff on? You know, with Conan, we'd write a lot of like,
right,
Conan's a virgin, women hate him,
right,
he's pale. So you had to come up with kind of new,
right,
what were Letterman's little...
Well, we were writing jokes,
quirks.
You know, well, he's got a beard. So, you know, little openers about you know, addressing his appearance, and then he kind of trimmed his beard like a few weeks out, and then I thought, oh no, we're writing too many beard jokes, and he's I thought that was a brushback.
He's sabotaging
pitch.
Them. Yeah.
I thought he was communicating by, you know, I'm gonna keep these guys on edge by trimming my beard. So, but we didn't really get to meet till just day before we started taping. We taped over two shows. So it was, I mean, you know what it's like. It all becomes a last minute scramble of once you're together in person of picking an order for the jokes, deciding what's in and out and which show to slot it into. There were six episodes. So,
oh, wow.
But that was
fun. You filmed all six over the weekend.
Right. Yes.
Oh, wow.
But that was exciting.
Yeah, that's a big job.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was really great. And it was great to work with him, and his two producers, Mary Barclay and Tom Kenny, were great. So it was really fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah, no. And Conan was really, he said, oh, you know what? He goes, if you get a chance to work with Dave, you've got to do that. And I, yes. And it really was like an indelible experience. It really was great.
Yeah. So Conan wasn't jealous. That's good.
No, he played it totally cool.
Wow.
Yeah. And believe me,
he wasn't texting you during coming up with things for you to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but you know, there were times where Dave was like, should we do this joke or that joke? And I said, Dave, right now I'm working on my podcast with Jesse. Please.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what fan question we should answer next week. Just back off.
Hey, now, it sounds like you weren't doing that.
You know, you're right. So what's been going on with you?
Oh, my God.
What's going on? Yeah.
I mean, things have been similarly busy for me.
Yes.
No, I mean, I'm looking for work. I'll put that out there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get staffed on a narrative comedy.
Oh.
That's what I'm looking to do. So
well,
I've been taking
great at that.
Meetings that are called generals.
They're called generals?
They're called generals, yes.
Like just to get to know you and break the ice.
Yeah, it's like getting to know executives.
Your personality.
And it's funny because, I mean, these meetings have been going on. So all the main networks, like the primetime networks,
right,
are all doing, they were sort of figuring out their lineup in the last couple of weeks.
Right.
And then they have upfronts this week.
Yes.
Where they announce what actually is going to be on their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been taking these meetings and sometimes you'll spend an hour talking to an executive about a certain show.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I watched the whole show and got caught up and then had pitches for it. And then you find out this week that show's canceled.
Oh no.
So there's no job at all.
Hey, wait, would this be after you did this meeting?
Yes,
right after
yes.
it?
Yeah, like immediately after, pretty much.
Oh my God. Oh my. And you've got to wonder whether certainly that executive doesn't know it's being canceled. Why would they waste their time?
Oh yeah, no, they don't know. And they don't want it to get canceled, but people above them.
Although I've heard stories of executives knowing something was canceled, but to other people right up till the last second, they're just like, oh yeah, no, we love it. We love it.
Right.
We love it. So
yeah, I think that there might've been a little bit of that because especially the later it got in the process, I felt like a little bit of the light was going out of their eyes when it would come up, but they have to still kind of go through the motions, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think I have multiple offers on canceled shows.
Well, our guest today, I have to say, is a singular performer. I will safely say he might be one of the bravest performers I've ever seen in that this man will go on a TV show and improvise an entire appearance on a television show.
With music, yes.
With music.
Yeah.
I think you and I, we've seen him enough to know that, yes, everything he does, he makes out of whole cloth right on the spot. It's...
Mm-hmm. It's really, if you haven't seen Reggie Watts perform live, you should do yourself a favor and try to see him.
Or just, Google some television, some late night or concert appearances by him. And it's just something to behold. It's amazing.
It's so much fun. And it's different every time.
Right.
He's he's equally talented at music as he is at comedy.
Yeah.
So he can improvise the way a jazz artist would improvise music and then also improvise in the comedy sense.
And stick the landing.
And stick the landing.
Use that term. But yeah. And of course, now he's on TV every night. He's James Corden, also James Corden's band leader. So
that's right.
Which we learned about that job too, and how he kind of brings his sense of improv to that position.
But before that, he was a regular on the Conan show. And he even opened for Conan on the Legally Prohibited from Being Funny on Television tour, or LPFBFT.
That's correct.
As I like to call it.
Yes, that all happened back in 2010. And that's how Reggie came into the kind of the Conan family, so to speak. So here he is, Mr. Reggie Watts.
I remember seeing you like when I first started going to see live comedy in Los Angeles, and it just blew my mind. I was like, oh, wait, there can be musical comedy that's actually good music.
Oh my God. Thank you. Thanks for that. That was like half the reason why I do it.
It's not a musical parody.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's not intentionally bad. This is great.
Yeah. Agreed. Oh, that's awesome.
Where did you first see Reggie?
I don't know if I saw you at UCB for the first time. I vividly remember a show at El Cid, though. That was like a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Probably when I first moved here.
Yeah, it was like in the mid-aughts, probably.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone remembers the first time they saw Reggie. I think everyone's just, it's not like anything you've seen before. So it just...
What's the first time you saw Reggie, Sweeney?
First time I saw Reggie. Well, first time I heard about Reggie was from all the writers when Conan was going on tour. And they're...
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's just like, well, there should be an opening act. And I think Todd Levin was like, Reggie Watts. And then all the other writers were like, oh, my God, yes, Reggie Watts. And I had not seen you because, you know, I never left the office. I had no idea. I didn't know who was president.
Yeah.
So I think the first time I saw you was, I guess I saw a video maybe. But the first time I saw you live probably was... On tour?
No, you just booked him without
You never went to a rehearsal,
him.
Right? For the tour? No.
I don't think so.
You just showed up and did the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Eugene. Yeah. You killed right away and it was fantastic.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a very weird moment. when you hear about something in a news cycle, but then you're directly associated to it, like a few days later.
Right. Because had you been following the drama with the Tonight Show and then got a call to be a part of the tour?
Yeah, I mean, like everybody was talking about it, all the comedians and, you know, and so we all knew about it and we're all like, ugh! And then a few days, we heard about the plans for a tour. And then not too long after that, my manager called and was like, hey, you want to do the tour? I was like, sure.
I think you had other stuff. Maybe you were doing other tours, but it worked out where you could do all the shows. It just worked out perfectly.
You just planned a parallel tour.
Yeah. I was just like helicoptering.
Right.
Back and forth.
Can you tell us more about, so this is, I mean, we're kind of backing into it, but this is how you, I think, first became associated with Conan and the Conan TV show, right? Am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, it is. Yeah. I mean, I knew Todd from the Jimmy Kimmel, or not Jimmy Kimmel, it's Jimmy Fallon, geez, so many Jimmys, Fallon show. And I believe, or he knew people, I don't know, he was responsible slightly for that, for me being on that show.
Oh.
Because he was in the comedy, because he would be at the comedy nights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know what? The writers are great sources for everything, like casting, there'd be always be new sketches and be like, oh, who'd be good for this? And just because the writers were out all the time and at UCB, they'd say, oh, this person, that person. Sure. That was the first time it was like, hey, who'd be a good opening act for Conan? But they had the answer for that too, so it was great.
I know, I felt so lucky. It was amazing. It was one of the greatest tours. I've been on a few tours, and it was definitely one of the best tours I've ever been on.
Yeah, I'm sure the energy was just insane.
It was.
Yeah.
It was a very unique tour because it was half television people and half like tour people, music touring people. So it was this really cool convergence of two different production styles working together, which was insane. I love seeing how production functions. And so that was really cool.
Yeah. Were you kind of familiar with both sides of it? I mean, just from having a music background?
Yes. I mean, the music touring probably more so than TV, but I had been on, you know, a couple TV things. And, you know, I definitely understood how TV worked. I just didn't have as much experience with it. You know, and then, of course, going out on the road, the version of the TV element to it was also slightly different. So like everything was slightly different than it normally would be isolated, you know?
Right.
Were you a fan of, like, had you watched Late Night before you ended up going on the tour with Conan? Did you, what was your sort of cultural awareness of Conan O'Brien?
And you can make stuff up.
Yeah, of course. And these are all going to be lies and embellishments. There's just like a Conan drone flooding out my window right now. Like,
there's a sight trained on your forehead.
Yeah, I just heard missiles armed. You know, quite honestly, I didn't have television. I didn't have access to cable. I didn't live with it in the 90s, late 90s into 2000s. Also, I didn't, you know, and obviously the internet was new, but people were passing around clips and stuff like that. And I probably saw things here and there. But Conan was really the only show that I really paid attention to when I did see clips, because he was a weirdo. You know, he was the kind of outlier guy. And I really appreciated just the strangeness of, and also the sincerity of what he was doing. The other shows were a little bit more standard.
Yeah, it seemed like you had a similar sketch sensibility in terms of wanting to zag when others zig.
Right.
Yes, 100%. So I was aware of that. So I always had like a huge amount of respect for him. Yeah, it was just kind of like something that was built in, you know, like he was kind of like of the late night. He was the closest to the sensibilities of all the comics I was hanging out with in the Lower East Side. So he felt like, oh, he's kind of like one of us, but he's got talk show.
When's he coming to the Lower East Side to see
us? I know, when's he going to come there? It's like, now he's too tall. He can't fit through the door, man. He's too tall.
Right, man.
So then you kind of quickly started becoming a staple on the TBS show in terms of a guest, like a musical slash stand-up spot guest, which was a really, I mean, that was nice for the show, I'm sure, to kill two birds with one stone.
I didn't think about it that way. That's so cool.
Do you remember the first appearance you did? Because I just watched a bunch of them. I know you did, let's see, in 2010.
Yeah, I think that was the first. It was in November, so it was right after the show started.
Is it the one I was wearing the golf sweater?
Yes.
I lost that sweater.
You remember, do you remember based on what you wore?
Yeah. Basically what sweater I wore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember. I think that was the one. I think Kumail was in the audience. I got him into the show with Emily.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I do remember that. Well, you know, I mean, that was the cool thing about Conan, right? Like the whole team around Conan and the whole spirit around the Conan show is more open to people who are a little bit outside of the norm, and they're a lot more forgiving and open to trying an idea. And so for me, obviously I had gone on tour, so they saw what I did. That definitely helped.
But they knew what they were getting into.
Yeah, they knew pretty much what I was, even though I didn't know what I was doing. But like, you know, they were like, go for it, kid, you know, and
His 5 minutes.
His is 5 minutes. Good luck. And I was like, oh boy.
Put some future stars in the audience.
Yeah, totally. Big deal. It's Hollywood. Yeah, I just remember being, you know, obviously very excited and, you know, nervous. I wanted to do well. But, you know, once I got started, it was great. But it was always like, so, I mean, that 5 minutes goes by like, boom, you know, like it's so quick. Yeah. And for me, I'm like, oh, I hope this is enough time.
Right.
You know, and I hope I'm not going overtime. You know, that's really, that was probably my biggest concern the whole time I was performing. I was like, I hope I'm on time.
Yeah. You're not used to that constraint ever, I assume, you know,
not general. I mean, because it's loose.
Kind of straight jacketing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, TV is a lot more like, please stick to this. You know, we would appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Right. The advertisers would like if you.
Yes. Right. Yeah. We don't want to edit your performance.
unless you're going to mention Budweiser.
Yeah, totally. Unless you mention one of our sponsors. We'll just tie it into a commercial and then we won't have to pay for it. But yeah, I mean, you know, doing like lineup nights you know, you should stick to a certain amount of time, but obviously it's loose. So yeah, this was like me kind of having a new parameter that I wanted to be concise.
When you started doing TV spots, were you worried about how your comedy was going to translate into that, you know, like you said, that golf sweater type five, like, was that stressful for you to have to kind of condense things into?
No, again, really the only thing that I wanted to make sure was that I was fitting within the time that was asked for the show. Like that was the only thing I was ever really worried about.
Right.
The creativity part, that's kind of the easier part because, you know, that's what I do. But mostly I just want to make sure that I'm respectful of the show's time.
That's so nice that you have that sort of inner security about.
otherwise I freak out.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
I'm just like, oh boy.
Yeah, I would think if you improvise something for 5 minutes afterwards, are you ever just like, oh, I wish I had thought of this or that, or you don't even worry? It's just like, it is what it is. And
it depends. Sometimes yeah. I'll have like, you know, I'll want it to end energetically differently right. than I did because I might have been like a little bit too worried about time, and then I kind of forgot about doing it. So, you know, I did that when I did Ted. The way I ended it was not the way I wanted to end it. I wanted it to be like full of effects and swimming, you know, and all this cool shit. And then I want to cut off. But instead, it was like I had no effects. So I was kind of trying to do it vocally and it really sucked. But yeah, I mean, like all the Conan things, like they all had to, I mean, because I also did some high concept stuff on there. And and just the fact that I got to do it was enough, even if it wasn't like exactly maybe how I envisioned it in my mind. The fact that I actually did it and walked off the stage, I was like, wow, that was a thing that I thought about and I actually got to do it.
I pulled it off. Yeah.
Yeah, my impression was you had kind of an open once the TBS show started, it was kind of like, come on when you feel like you're ready and then do whatever. Pretty much it was whatever you felt like doing.
I know. I loved that. I mean, I loved that. Yeah. You know, the other thing I loved about, you know, I think I talked about this for the documentary.
All right. Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I talked about it. But the thing I also like, my things that I noticed about shows is that shows are run by a whole crew of people and, you know, they're showrunners and all this stuff. But really the feeling of a show kind of reflects the host in many ways. Mm-hmm. But depending on like some people kind of surrender to whatever, they're just like, it's a job. And they just like, here's what it ends up being. And this is it.
Right.
But with Conan, it always just felt chill like that. Which I always appreciated because if I ran a show, that's the vibe.
Right.
You know, that's like Conan was doing a show the way I would run a show.
Right.
If, you know, not that I'm anybody in that realm, but you know what I mean? Like
maybe at some point.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But I appreciated that. And I also appreciated even on tour, I like that he took the time to like, he'll just come into the dressing room and just like hang out.
Mm.
And
he legitimately likes to hang out.
Yeah, he really likes to hang out. And I know, you know,
he's a hanger-outer.
Yeah, he's a hangers-outer. And he needs people energy. I understand. I'm the same kind of person. Yes. I need some energy. So why not, like, let's dive into someone's vibe, you know, that's on the show.
Right.
Because they're here.
Yeah.
So, like, let's do it, you know. So I really enjoyed that. Plus, we commiserated over the fact that he grew up Cath and I grew up Cath.
Oh, yeah.
And that I'm half redhead. Yeah, so we're both, I'm half redhead, he's full redhead, you know, so there's...
Wait, which half?
My mother's French with red hair.
Oh, I thought maybe it was like the back half. Oh, yeah,
no, that would be incredible. That would be, I would never, they'd be like, oh, you're so punk rock. It's like, I don't do anything, it's just like this.
Speaking of your mother being French, one of my favorite things is all the different accents and voices you do.
Yeah.
And is that ever pre-planned? Like I saw one where like you kind of had a New York voice, then you did a song, then you came back out of that and you're British. There's no rhyme or reason to any of it every time I've seen you. And do you ever plan that ahead of, or you're just like whatever voice comes into your head at the time?
No, I don't really plan it. I'm just like it. You know, like as I'm approaching the stage, I'm like, maybe I just start talking. And then if the voice kind of sounds British, then I just stick with it, you know?
Right.
And then I know that when I end a song, like as I'm finishing a bit or something or sonic thing, or it doesn't have to be a song, it could just be a hard switch, like mid sentence or whatever. But I'm just thinking like, oh, something different. Oh, this
coming out of it. Right.
And then they'll just switch to that.
Wow.
You know, but it really depends. It's like, that's what I love about it. I'm like, how do I, cause I'm really just kind of in the audience, you know, as I'm doing it. And so I'm like, what's going to fuck them up? You know, like, you know.
Oh,
like,
I love that. You know, you're putting yourself in the audience and like, what would throw them for a loop?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what do I want to, what would I want to see? Like, I want to be tripped out. I want to be, you know, I want to be like destabilized, you know? And so, yeah, that's usually, it's just like an instinctual.
I want to feel like someone slipped something in my drink.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I always say that, like, for my performances, I want people who aren't on drugs to feel like they're on drugs, and people who are on drugs to like blast off into another dimension. So hopefully.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Well, I don't think I realized.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that you did a lot of improv, but I don't know if I realized that you were literally like walking out there, not totally sure what you were going to do. So what would you do? Because I know usually for our stand-ups, there would be like a rehearsal or even, for instance, you did one where you played and you started improvising music with the Basic Cable Band.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what would you do to rehearse for that? Did you rehearse at all? Or were you literally just like, I'm showing up right before my...
A sound check.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the most I would do is maybe a sound check. But I think the one with the band, I don't even know if we did that, because all I said was at the end, I'll cue you to, you know, kind of take over from what I'd laid down on the loop machine.
Oh, wow.
And then they would take over and we'd just do this handoff and then I would continue. And so, yeah, because you don't, you know, the thing is like those things I don't really need. I think the song about a horse or whatever like that.
Right.
I think I discussed a structure with the musicians backstage. So we had a structure and we just came up with the strumming pattern like backstage in the green room. And that was kind of it.
Wow.
And then when we went on stage, you know, it was just costuming and lights to make it look more solid than it was. And then we just started and just did it. And then that was the one where, what's his name from ZZ Top? Gibbons?
Oh, Billy Gibbons?
Yeah, Billy Gibbons just happened to be there and decided to join in. And so he's just there in the back.
Right.
And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Let's have him too.
Sure. Absolutely.
Wow. That's so magical.
It was very magical. It was very surreal,
yeah.
You know, because that's my favorite thing. I love having like all these insane resources set up for a moment that's like super uncertain. It's like the best feeling for me, because you've got the support of the framework around you.
Yeah.
So that kind of does all the heavy lifting for structure. And then all I have to do is play off of the situation, which is just a blast for me.
Yeah. They're the Basic Cable Band.
Oof.
They're so great at just, because they would back a lot of musical guests and they just seemed incredibly versatile and kind of could just jump into anything. So
they were great. They were the greatest, man. Like really, really cool cats. I'm glad I got to meet them. And Jimmy was always like just such a warm, open, welcoming guy for me.
Jimmy Vivino.
Yeah, the Vavines.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's so, it's cool to hear because I feel like what you're describing with comedy, it's similar in music where if you're just, if you have enough skilled musicians, they can get together without rehearsing and kind of
make something.
And maybe your comedy is similar where it's like, if you're a skilled enough improviser, you can just, and you have other people like that around you,
yeah.
you can just go out there and make something.
Yeah.
Which is what it feels like watching you and Conan.
Yeah, I mean, it's but comedy is very similar to music. That's why for me, when I play music, but also I see comedy as music as well. And so it's similar, at least improvisationally, they kind of come from the same place. It's just a different expression of the same idea.
There was one appearance that I wanted to ask you about where you really kind of went into a comedy sketch, the Kwanzaa juice.
Oh, yeah.
Sketch.
Yeah.
Was that something you had written or did a writer pitch that for you? Because it felt like that was your appearance, but I couldn't tell exactly where the sketch ended and where the performance began.
Yeah. I told them I wanted like kind of like a fireplace chair kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a large tome of some sort. and then I wanted like some kind of a bottle that was labeled Kwanzaa juice. I think those are the things that I asked for. And then,
so you produced the sketch. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I produced the sketch. Yeah. And then I just like,
you love production.
I did. And I just got up and improvised.
Oh, wow.
You know, cause I knew that I was going to probably start sitting down with the tome. That I knew.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And then I was going to do something with
you got a tome out there. You got to address the tome.
You got to tome it up.
Yeah.
Tome. Yeah. That was just like one of those things where I was like, just have these things out there and I think it'll work out.
And it did.
Yeah, it did.
I thought it was pre-written. I was like, oh, maybe that was a Jose Arroyo sketch.
Oh, nice.
Pitch for you.
Nice. That's great. It worked.
Yeah, it worked. As we all know, you are now you're the house band, the band leader at the Corden Show. How did you start getting involved with the Late Late Show?
Yeah, that was, I just stopped doing comedy Bang Bang.
Right.
Oh, wait, so the emphasis is on the second Bang.
Yes.
Bang
a lot Bang. Of people don't know that.
Yeah, thank you.
A lot of people don't
We've
know
been
that.
Saying it wrong. Well, I'm always afraid to mention it because I don't know which Bang to accent.
It sucks because it's like, it just seems a certain way and it's not. And it kind of like, it's terrible. I like Comedy Death Ray. It was just
easier. English is hard.
Yeah.
But it really separates real fans from.
Yes.
The hoi polloi.
Comedy Bang Bang.
Bang Bang.
Yeah. So I just quit. You know, I did my last show and was in town, I think, for like an extra few weeks or something like that.
Right.
Then I got this call from my manager saying like, oh, this guy James he's going to take over Kilbourne's, I guess. No, not Kilbourne. Yeah. Is that right?
Craig Ferguson.
Ferguson.
Yeah. So many Craigs.
So many Craigs, so many Jimmys. Take over his spot. And, so it's going to be a talk show. And, you know, he's interested in you being a band leader. And I was like, but I just got out of being a band leader. And
I already did my time.
I put in my time already.
Now we're getting pigeonholed.
Yeah, no. So I was like, yeah, I'll meet with him, and met with him at this hotel in Beverly Hills. And yeah, and it was just kind of like, he just was like, do you want to be the band leader? I mean, it's like most of the things in my life, I've gotten really lucky because people just asked me to do it. And I didn't have to like, I wasn't.
And you don't know how to say no.
Yeah, I don't know how to say no. You know? Or it's obvious that I should say yes. You know,
You were like, I already do a fake British accent. And now this guy's doing
it. I know, it's like, why is he? These Brits. It was surreal though. I mean, because, you know, I'd just gotten done with Comedy Bang Bang. I was like, I play a fake band leader.
Yeah.
You know, on band leader. I'm a one-man band leader on a fake talk show. And then here's this guy asking me to be on an actual talk show as an actual band leader with a band.
Yeah.
So it was very weird to like have those things time out like that. It was very odd.
So did you go out and put that band together yourself?
Yeah.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They asked me, you know, Sarah Silverman, basically I took like a month to figure out whether I wanted to do this or not.
Right.
And Sarah at the end was like, well, just ask for all the stuff that you want. And if they give it to you, consider doing it. So, so I just said, I want to put together my own band. I want the band to improvise. I don't want to be wearing suits.
Right.
I want it to be more of a rock band kind of a situation. And I want to minimize rehearsing as much as possible because I want to be improvising.
That was great advice from Sarah Silverman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah's always the sage. If I have an issue, a conundrum, I just ask her. Uh-huh. She usually gives me a pretty awesome reflection.
And so they said yes to everything. And then you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
I have to do it.
Yeah. But seriously, I was like, oh, well, I guess I got to do it now.
Right.
But it was great.
They've outsmarted me at every turn.
Those are great terms, though.
It was great terms, and they agreed to it, and I love that they did. And I think James just has really good instincts in that regard. He's really good at letting people do what they do.
Yeah.
So that was great. And then I just put together, I knew the first two cats that I wanted, I wanted Tim and Steve. I knew Tim and Steve from Seattle days, and Tim's a genius guitar player, just a virtuosic monster. And then Steve was great because he had a company called IQ Beats that did sound-alikes and audio logos for radio stations all over the world. So he had to reverse engineer, all kinds of songs because they wanted sound-alikes. So he's just a master producer.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that'll come in handy. He's also an amazing keyboardist and a saxophone player.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that'll come in handy if they need jingles, or they need something that's pre-written for a sketch or whatever. He could do it. And in his sleep, it's super easy for him.
It's wild how things happen when they should. Like, you had all this background with other musicians. And when it came time for you to pick a band, you knew right where to go.
Yeah, I mean, although the drummer and the bass player, that was a little bit more of a hunt.
Play along.
Oh, sorry. I mean, yes.
Wait, what were you saying? I feel like I interrupted you. So you had this great...
He was great. And then I was looking for a drummer and a bass player. Uh-huh. And I asked Catherine Popper from Jack White's band at the time, because she's just an amazing bass player. And I was like, oh, that's right. Because I wanted Tim and Steve, and then I wanted diversity for the band. And so there were all kinds of great musicians that I could have asked. It could have been a bunch of dudes up there, but I need at least one or two other women in the band.
Sure.
And at least a person of color in the band. And Guillermo was recommended to me by a bunch of local musicians and tried him out. And I was like, I like this guy's vibe. He's great. And so, asked him, and then... Hagar was in New York. I was in New York because I was still living in New York, getting ready to move all my shit. So I met her at a rehearsal space, and I tried out a bunch of different bass players, amazing bass players, but they just weren't down to, weren't the right vibe. And then I sat down with Hagar, and I did I brought my looping pedal, and I would do I would just improvise a song, do a quick beat, and then do a vocal bass line or whatever. And then she would hear the bass line and immediately start playing it. And then we'd jam for a little bit. And it only took me about maybe 10 minutes. And I was like, yeah, this is the one. And plus she's super charismatic and very striking. And so that was kind of I didn't actually notice that until she actually showed up there for it. Because I was she's badass. Yeah. And I was yeah. And then she showed up for rehearsal. And all the producers were like, wow, she's so telegenic. And I was like, oh, yes. Yes, I knew that.
Yeah, I knew that. of course.
Yeah. But, and she's Israeli. It was cool. We put together a good Muppet band. I just wanted a Muppet vibe. And all of those players are all kind of outsiders. Guillermo's one of a kind. And Tim has been playing in weirdo, super high intellectual, but weirdo bands for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, also... playing for K.D. Lang and people
right.
that as well.
Right.
But generally his original projects are really way out awesome stuff. And then Steve was just a studio dude. He was just in a studio, hunched over, an indoor kid, whole band is a bunch of weirdos, and Hagar is Israeli, playing for all kinds of people. Yeah. So it was great. And when I put it together, they were like, yeah, sure. And I was like, great. Okay.
So is that chemistry when it all, can you just look at all the band members and go, oh, that person's really fitting in with everyone? You know what I mean? It just musically, can you tell that or just?
Yeah.
Is also involved talking in between and getting a vibe, just Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I purposely set up this series of, I did a weekly show, which was kind of like going back to my roots in Seattle in the 90s when we'd have jam nights. Uh-huh. And so I had I purposefully chose a Tuesday night, either wanted a Tuesday or Wednesday, kind of an off night at El Cid. And we would just improvise, you know, for a couple hours. And we did that for, I'd say like almost a year.
Oh, wow.
And I did it on purpose because I wanted to accelerate the chemistry. Yeah. So I just like putting people on the spot, you know, it's like, well, we're doing a show, so we're going to improvise live and we're going to see what happens. And it just worked out.
That's really smart.
Yeah. And you had to get everyone else as comfortable as you are with that. Because I'm sure that's not what every musician, you know, gets into music thinking, oh, I'm going to have to also kind of improvise on live television.
right. Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted them to be comfortable, you know, because,
yeah.
And now we do improvise, but it's kind of, any piece of music that we do has to be registered for publishing.
Oh, right.
So we actually now have a catalog, like a bump catalog of bumpers. And yes. So we have like, I think Tim calculated it at around like 4,000 or maybe more.
Wow.
Of these bumpers. And so he can just put together, you know, on the list, on the sheet for the day, he'll like, oh, we'll do this, we'll do that, we'll do this, we'll do that. And then he'll slightly remind, like in our comms, like, you know, while the guests are on or while we're doing a bit, he'll be like, dun, 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 E. Okay, cool. And then we're sitting there for a second. Yeah. And then they'll be like, we'll be right back. And so there's like reminders.
Oh, yeah. So you don't have to memorize what number everything is. No. Like, this is 2,317.
Yeah. And some people do recognize the names. Yeah. The bump, the names are fucking ridiculous. Right. I mean, they are.
Sure.
They are. So stupid, but I can't even think of any, but like Bezos Mikulos is one of them. What's the, oh yeah. Like Don's Sweeney, who he was like our original, kind of music dude.
I like that one.
There's just like a bunch and they're just so ridiculous. And some of them are like, we're really going to register these. But
can you string them all together and release them as like an album?
My God.
Yeah. Cool. Just like the longest Spotify playlist.
Oh my
God. Should explain a bumper is that's the music when it's like, we'll be right back. Yeah. And then the music goes out to commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the play in, play out of commercial break music. I kind of realized, I theorized this. I don't know if it's true, but I was thinking like the reason why they call them bumpers, do you think it's because it's in relation to cars? You know, like the bumpers on cars, like there's a front bumper and a rear bumper.
Oh, right. Of course. I think that's exactly what it is.
Seems like it would be.
Or it's some weird German word from the 20s.
Oh, and it protects the show from impact.
Yes, right.
Yeah, from the commercials.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's not a dry cut back to the show. Yeah. You know, it's like there's a little bit of softening.
A little moisture.
moisture, a little, you know, crossfade moisture. It's great.
So there's not too much friction.
You don't want that. You don't want a dry show because it breaks.
Well, how are you? So James Corden just announced that he's ending his show next year.
What?
I know. Oh,
that's
man.
Why we
I
had
really
you on.
Oh, shit.
You would have heard
they
that.
They wanted us to break the news to you. They thought right after you woke up was the way to do it.
Okay.
I really don't think we should be the ones doing this.
Wow. That's so cool. That's cool. That's really cool.
It's not for a year, so you have time.
Yeah, it's still a year away. I mean, it is kind of nice with these, you know, Hollywood announcements like that. It's like you have a year to sort of let things sink in, and you probably knew about this before that announcement.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you've probably been badgering him.
Well, yeah.
Go back to that.
It was definitely like everyone was like, Lydia. Lydia, when are you gonna, what are you, you know, for a while, everyone's playing cool, you know, everyone's like running theories, you know, but someone said like months and months ago that they said that they were talking to James and he remembers James saying something to the crew that he'd like to give people a year. So James, for them, you know, that's the one thing. It's like when James says something will be like the way it is, like, I don't think there's ever been a time when that hasn't been true. He says what he means. And so it was this, I was pretty certain, prepared for maybe not, but pretty certain that there was at least going to be a year behind it. And then I just remember, after a show, the band was like, yeah, James wants to meet with us, but like with the band. And I never got that text. So I was like, oh, he just wants to meet with you guys. Okay, cool. So I started to leave. And James was coming down the hallway. And he's like, Rick, are you joining? And I'm just like, oh, I don't know. You want me to go down?
You're the band leader? Like, are you going to join?
And I was like, okay, sure. And then we just walked down into the band room and he sat down and it was great. I mean, he told us before. I mean, you know, a few people knew, he told us first because he was like, well, you know, you're part of the, you know, you're on camera and you're on stage and you're the kind of the face of it. And so I just wanted to let you know what I've decided. And then, you know, he talked about it and it was emotional. You know, he was, it's hard not to, you know, I try to play it cool, but it's hard not to be emotional when you know that this is something that he sincerely has thought about very, very, very hard and made this decision. And I was kind of not totally surprised because, you know, because I see James as he's kind of similar to me. He's like, you know, he's on a journey and he's an artist and a creator. And I never felt like this is his absolute thing that he wants to do.
Right.
Yeah, this is a stop along the way.
Like this was his ultimate dream.
Yeah, because he got offered it like I did, you know. It wasn't like he was fighting to get it. He was like, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so I wasn't totally surprised. And then, it was a very, very odd moment. It's like one of those surreal moments. I mean, it's kind of similar, like taking it back to like getting the Conan tour. It's like you're like you hear about something and then it doesn't, then nothing for a little bit. And then suddenly it's like, here's the reality. It's like, oh,
right.
For real? Like, this is the reality. Oh, this really is.
I guess I have to address this now with myself.
Yeah. Like this is real. So I need to figure that out. But, I'm very excited. I think it's good, especially for creative folks to be scared a bit and not get too comfortable. And, you know, it all depends on, you know, obviously the crew, the production people would love it to keep going forever. You know, that's like their gig. I get it. For creative people, it's nice to be dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, and these are great gigs. I mean, a late night show, it's like one of the only jobs that you kind of know where you're going to be for the next year. And you also know what your vacation days are. And it's like, it's just very stable. It's the insurance company of television.
100%. Yeah. And I get it. And, you know, and all the people in the band are like, okay, well, what are we going to, you know, everybody's like, it's a mixed bag, you know, cause they're like, okay, that means I got to figure out. I mean, even for me, I'm like, I got to figure out, well, I guess I better save up this year cause I don't know what's going to happen the year afterwards, you know?
Well, I'm sure someone's going to just offer you something. Probably the last day.
Exactly.
Of the Late Late Show.
I want you to start doing dramatic acting.
Yeah.
You have great acting chops.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Will Smith.
Someone has to fill in that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Why not you?
The lack of serious actors. I don't know, but I think in general there's kind of excitement. There's like that uncertainty, but also fuck it. You know, it's like when I decided to quit my job in my 20s and focus on music, like that was really scary.
Yeah, like, no safety net.
No.
And you're right. I don't think for artists, being too comfortable is not usually a good thing for innovation in terms of keeping things. It has to be a little scary, like you said.
Yeah. And that's totally fine. And I mean, James is in the same spot. He doesn't know what he's going to do either. Mm-hmm. And and he feels that. He's just like, I just know that this is the right decision for me. And I really appreciated that. I appreciate his honesty.
Yeah.
His ability to communicate what it is that he needs to say as he's feeling it. And you can tell that he's taken a lot of consideration behind it. You can feel it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a hard thing to walk away from.
Yeah.
Yes.
Has your time there gone super fast? That was my experience working on a late night show.
Light speed.
That just like, whoa.
Yeah.
How did 7 years go by?
Yeah. You guys know it's like, you know, you show up and you do your thing and you get into a rhythm and it's broken up by amazing moments. And then there's some like, well, the show just ran really well today. You know, it's like they all start to kind of bleed together.
The comedy factory. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. You're pumping out, you know, it's a volume based industry. So it's like, we got to make a lot of stuff, a lot of content. Yeah, of course.
And you almost don't have time to think about the future, really. Do you know what I mean? It's so you've got to be, oh, we're doing a show. We're doing a, you're just like making donuts. So
yeah,
it's hard to think long range.
You know? Yeah. It's not, yeah, it's not really a thing that naturally lends itself to that way of thinking. It's more right, like, yeah, right. You know, especially for me, cause I just, I show up, I'm not part of the rehearsal. I show up like, you know, 10 minutes before the show starts and, you know, and then we
is that true? The show. That's fantastic. Oh yeah. My God. That sounds great.
Yeah, but
oh, so you don't like when they do musical parodies or anything like that, are you involved? Your music work is all just about playing on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's like any extra music, usually they'll ask Steve to do that.
Because I
told them like I didn't want the band to automatically back up, you know, people. I like the band
keep
being
them
the
unique.
Band. Yeah, right. just keep them the band. And on rare occasion, we will. Like, they backed up. A couple of musicians went and backed up Michael Bublé.
Right.
And that was really great.
That's cool.
Well, for Bublé, you got to do it.
For Bubles, anything.
You want that on your resume.
Yeah. You just want it. You just want to say you did it, you know?
The boobs.
Yeah, I just wanted the band to kind of like be the band. And so for the most part, we're just doing music. And if there's anything that's extra, generally... Tim, who I kind of thought when I put the band together would kind of become the first officer, you know? He's that guy. So he helps organize all this stuff.
The whip.
Yeah, he's great. Awesome. So he's kind of like the AD.
Man.
And cool. I just get to show up and do my
that
thing.
That sounds so sweet.
It's great.
Well, I know we have to let you go, but I love the Reggie's Question segment that you do on the Late Late Show.
Yeah.
But I thought this was our chance to ask you a question.
Sure.
So, Reggie, if you could ask yourself one question, would you?
You don't have to answer it.
You know, if I had to ask myself one question, would I?
Yeah.
I guess if I had to.
Take as much time as you need.
Yeah, if I had to.
No,
then I would've...
you don't have to. Oh. You could.
Oh, okay. If I could. No, probably not.
Smart That's
move. Correct. Yeah.
That's the right answer.
Thank you so much, Reggie.
Oh, my pleasure.
Reggie, it's great seeing you again.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what you do next.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll just be like on a farm. Just like.
Right.
They just asked me. They asked me to run the farm.
Yeah.
He's running a farm in a golf sweater.
It's like, oh, that makes sense.
Thank you, Reggie Watts. That was great.
Thank you, Reggie.
He's a delightful.
He is great.
Human. We've got a listener question.
We do.
You know what? We get a lot of listener questions and not a lot of listener answers. I want our listeners to give us some answers.
Well, do we ever posit any questions? I mean, we have to ask questions. I just want
to know
questions.
What to do with my life or
the
why
big
we're all here. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I would love for anyone to weigh in on that.
Yeah.
Yes, please send us in answers. But in the meantime, we're going to answer your questions.
Yeah. And you know what? This question, that little existential intro sort of leads us into this question.
Oh, okay, good. Let's hear it.
It says, I thought about sending a voicemail, but heck, typing is so easy.
Sure. Okay.
Mike, how did you go from attorney to comedy writer? What led you to make the change? What was it like to change professions? Asking for a friend. Thanks. Kevin.
You know what? I used to be, when I did stand-up, there were lawyers who wanted to do stand-up who would kind of reach out to me and ask for advice.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crossover. I mean, we've maybe talked about this before, but I feel like lawyer brains and comedy writer brains are somewhat similar.
Yeah, sure.
In that you're solving puzzles a little bit.
Right. My experience was a lot of the lawyers I met who went into comedy just went to law school because they were putting off
disappointing their parents.
Pursuing comedy. And it has to do with parents. I mean, I never wanted to be a lawyer ever in my life. And my mother, who is kind of a monster, told me I had...
Made you?
Yeah. But, you know, and then I was in law school and I was like, oh, well, I can't quit. Like, what? So I worked as a trial lawyer for 3 years in New York City. And that's... And I finally moved... into New York City. And then I started
your mom's house, which is probably helpful.
Yes. And then I started doing stand-up at night. So I was a lawyer during the day and then I'd run and do open mics. I'd still be in a suit. Cause a lot of times I was working on a trial for the next day and I'd literally run from the office to
do
stand-up.
Briefcase?
I did. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love that.
I once left a briefcase in a pocket park in near Midtown Manhattan with all the evidence for a trial was in this.
Oh my God.
But I'm so absent-minded. I went back to work and I was like, okay, time to work on that case. And I was like, I've never run. And there it was.
Did somebody find it, but they dumped all the papers out and took the briefcase?
Oh my God. That would have been fine. No, it was just still sitting right where
I'd eaten my lunch.
But anyway, the second I was making $50 a week doing stand-up, I quit being a lawyer. And I had no money saved. I had an illegal sublet, so my rent was cheap, so I could do that.
But $200 a month.
Yeah. And it was great. You know, at the time, like if I was went on a date with someone and I explained, oh, you know, I'm a lawyer, but I really want to do stand-up comedy. If like 20 minutes later, the woman said, I just can't get over, you said, why would you give up being a lawyer? And I'd be like,
yes,
thank you. We're done. You're not the one.
Yeah. I mean, most lawyers I know, or attorneys, I guess, don't like being attorneys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were people in law school who are as like, oh, yes, you were born to be a lawyer. Like they just love it. They're very passionate about it. And, I would happily encourage any lawyer who wants to go into comedy, do it.
And the other thing,
just quit. and do it.
I know a few lawyers who are also comedians.
Right.
And the other thing too is you don't necessarily have to quit. If that sounds scary,
right,
you could still do comedy.
Yes.
And have a day job. And
absolutely.
Maybe even talk about your day job in your comedy.
Absolutely. Yes.
Or improv or whatever it is that
you
want to do at night. And maybe, you know, starting that way, you can kind of ease yourself out of it. You don't have to like quit and then start taking improv classes.
But, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just want less lawyers in the world. I think that's win-win. But well, yes, I mean, that's how I did it. Of course, I started trying stand-up and make sure
you like that too, because
yes,
the irony, unfortunately, I mean, is that anything once you make it a job becomes a little bit less pleasurable.
Yes.
Do you ever think about what you would do if you didn't, if you weren't a comedy writer now?
Oh, no, because
it just hasn't occurred to you.
5 minutes ahead.
Well, you'll never have to make that decision, but.
I become a golf pro on the senior tour. I'd have to learn to play golf. I don't know. How about you?
I think about it all the time.
The fact you asked that made me think you've really given it a lot of thought.
I mean, I have like the sort of pie in the sky, mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm going to open a sandwich shop or I'm going to open a yarn store.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
You've thought about opening a yarn store.
I certainly have. And it would just be a very cozy place where you could come and you could knit, you could buy yarn. I think I have an owl in this fantasy.
A real owl.
That's your store mascot. Yes, exactly.
Oh, I love that. But would you know how to, I could never run a business.
No, see, that's the problem is I know how to do the thing that I like, but I don't know how to run a business about it, which is also my problem with comedy, honestly. or I was like, maybe I'll start making CBD dog treats.
Oh,
I haven't tried to do this at all, but
don't worry.
That seems like an emerging market.
No one's going to arrest you. I'm so naive about all things involving cannabis.
Yeah.
But is that a thing with dogs? Like getting your dog high? I have no idea.
Oh, it's not even getting them high because the CBD is just for the relaxing part of it.
Sure.
But it's to calm anxious dogs.
Oh.
And I have that.
Oh, your dog is,
my dog is
a lunatic. I love your dog.
Yeah, she's crazy. She's great. She would eat the owl immediately. No, but then if I really had to kind of do a full career change.
Yes.
For some reason, I have this in my head, but landscape architect.
Ah, really?
Yeah. I think I'd have to go maybe get a degree.
Sure.
I'd get to work outside.
You're outside.
I have a green thumb.
That's what I was going to ask. I've seen your garden. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, my parents are both, they both have like full green hands. So I inherited just one finger.
Did you grow up doing a lot of planning? Like, were you kind of at their side? And...
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I did gardening with them. And
yeah,
my dad has a PhD in soil science, so he gives me lots of tips.
Okay. You know, I thought maybe we were near the end of the podcast. But then you said your father has a PhD in soil science.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There is that much to learn about it.
Wow. Does he specialize in certain...
I think he specializes in certain crops.
Okay. Ah, all right.
Yeah. So that's kind of what that's why we lived overseas, actually. He was consulting on crop growth in Latin America.
Corn?
Yes, some corn, but mostly like specialty crops, like berries, blueberries.
Really?
Is a big one.
Acid loving? What kind of soil do blueberries like? Crazy.
I don't know.
Don't play dumb. I really don't.
I don't know what the pH of the soil is that they need.
Wow. You know, sometime I should tell a story about, I was going through my father's old papers and I found a letter he wrote in 1972. And in it, it was about a meeting he had with a Dr. O'Brien from...
What?
From Boston.
No way.
And it turns out he had met...
It was Conan's dad?
With Conan's dad.
No way.
Yeah, in 1972.
Oh, my God.
Is that crazy?
That's really weird.
It is weird.
And he saved the letter, too.
I have the letter, yeah.
Yeah.
And my sisters and I, we were all going through his papers simultaneously. And if they had come across that letter, they wouldn't understand. They wouldn't have noticed.
Right. You were the only one who wouldn't have thrown it away.
Right. And then I called Conan like 10 minutes later and he goes, I'm here with my father. And he asked him and his dad didn't remember the meeting, but he said, yeah.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, at that time, because they were working.
Well, why did your dad meet with him?
My father was director of research for a pharmaceutical company. And he was working with antibiotics at the time.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I think he had talked to Dr. O'Brien about some clinical trials that were happening up in Boston.
Wow.
Yeah. Because Conan's father was also a research scientist.
Yeah.
And that's what my father was. So.
What my father was. Weird.
Yes. Crazy. So.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder if we're cracking the formula for comedy.
Yes. Comedy writing.
You have to have a deeply scientific father.
Exactly. And probably mother too.
Yeah. No, my mom has a master's in.
There you go. In what?
Great question. Biology?
Mm.
I might be wrong.
Well, I feel we covered a lot of ground this week.
Yeah. Where am I? Who am I?
Mm-hmm. And what do you want to be?
This felt like a very intense therapy session.
Yes. And that's why I'm glad you teed up our listeners giving us answers instead of questions. I'm looking forward to that.
So please submit your listener answers. Leave us a voicemail at 323-209-5303. We have an email. It's insideconanpod@gmail.com.
And here's a compelling reason you should give us answers, Jesse.
Yeah. Oh, because we love you.
Yeah.
Oh. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered.
Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.